Welcome to the VA Tourism Podcast. I am Kojo Benton Williams. The VA Tourism Podcast is dedicated to Africa's travel and tourism industry, where leaders from the private and public sectors get to talk to us. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, and Google Podcasts. In this episode, my guest, Michael Sudakasa, CEO of Africa Business Group and co-convener of the African Tourism Investment Summit, will discuss the investment opportunities and climate in Africa's tourism sector. Welcome to the Tourism Podcast, and my guest is Mr. Michael Sudakasa. He's the CEO of the Africa Business Group and the co-convener of the African Tourism Investment Summit, which was billed to happen this year. Unfortunately, because of the pandemic, it was postponed, and hopefully it will come up in 2021. Welcome to the podcast, sir.
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to join you, Kojo.
And how is investment climate? I mean, how are the investors feeling at this point in time?
Well, all of the industry, I would say, and this is, even if you're a project promoter, you're waiting, you're in limbo at this time. As you pointed out, we convened the African Tourism Investment Summit. We convened it in 2019. We were meant to convene it this year in April. It has been postponed to April 2021. It's part of the World Travel Market annual Africa Week. This year, though, we've moved online and we'll have a series of conversations. But in our first conversation with Ken Osei of the IFC as the investor, as part of the panel, he made clear that it's a time when investors are looking at opportunities, but they're keeping powder dry because one is not sure how long the holdup in the sector that's caused by the global pandemic of COVID-19 will interrupt the traditional and the historic flow of business that's happening worldwide. So Africa is being affected, and investors are waiting at this juncture. But it was interesting that he said there are some sectors that one can watch even in the midst of the pandemic.
Yeah. Go ahead, sir, please.
And some of those sectors include ICT as it relates to the tourism sector.
Yes.
Hotel projects are typically 24-month or so projects. And so he was saying that if you're developing now for the next 2 years, you may carry on with that. The shift from a very focused effort to market to the rest of the world to marketing more to local tourists means that there are also some opportunities to focus on domestic and regional tourism destination development. And he felt that those were still opportunities. So for example, in the MICE industry, there's still a need for meeting spaces for local associations and businesses, and there's still too few of those from an infrastructure standpoint on the continent. So it's still a time when pricing and those type of things would require a lot of negotiation and assessment, because we just don't know when there'll be a vaccine or a cure. But it's still a time when, if you're an investor and you have resources allocated for tourism sector, you're looking for opportunities.
Okay, no, that's good. Again, I mean, I spoke to ATI Group, and what they told me on the podcast was the fact that lots of the investors also think that it gives them the opportunity to even have a medium to long-term plan. And also sometimes you cut down on costs, because remember that when sectors like the construction sectors were allowed to operate, You know, it means that you work on numbers. Now, during last year's investment summit, the maiden edition in Cape Town, you mentioned that, and I quote what you said. You said, "Growing the tourism industry across Africa is an obvious way to boost economies and generate huge opportunities for communities to develop themselves and their infrastructure. Yet for the sector to realize its true potential and live up to its key role as a key driver of economic growth, more investment will be needed in enabling infrastructure, human capital, and tourism sector. Now, we face a situation that some of the regimes or the legal, the regulations sometimes do not favor investors to look at the tourism sector. How do you put the two together? We're requiring investment in our key infrastructure, yet it's always sometimes difficult for investors in terms of the regulations and how they can come in.
I think, first off, it's important to compartmentalize that statement a bit. And I say that because there are 55 countries on the continent, and they each have their own regulatory environment, policy environment, and some have more of a commitment and a recognition that tourism plays a tremendous role in their GDPs. And so they have incentives to attract investors. There may be others, though, that don't see tourism as a major contributor to GDP. And as such, I can't name a country that has flat out barriers. But what I would say is that there are definitely environments that are more conducive, particularly to foreign direct investment, because you also have to recognize that there's domestic investment in tourism that needs to take place and does take place, that often gets overlooked when one talks about the investors who come into the tourism space. So I'm pushing back a little bit, Kojo, and I would say you have to give me an example of a country at least around which to have a conversation about the regulatory environment or the policy environment. I know that if you have a regime where it's difficult, now this is on the human capital side,
okay,
to fire or lay off staff, then it may be beholden to one to say, well, I'm not going to hire as many staff because there's times when this industry can be cyclical. But I don't think that if you the fundamentals of investing in the tourism sector, to me, are positive. You have growing population, growing economies, even in the face of the pandemic. You have a very young population. In that regard alone, we will double the number of Africans on the continent in the next 30 years. So 330 million new Africans every 10 years, and a growing business community, a growing middle class, growing infrastructure to connect. I mean, that's one of the big areas that one needs to invest in, is transport infrastructure, logistics infrastructure on the continent. So I know that there are impediments and challenges in the sector, but I wouldn't go so far as to say that there are countries that have actually put in place barriers to try and keep investors from coming in, and or local investors from investing.
Okay. Now, the other challenge, and when I spoke and I speak to again with local investors, they tell me about sometimes, and these are conversations that they're saying, that if you look at a tourism sector, do you ascribe to the assertion that return on investment in terms of the time takes a bit of a time as compared to other sectors?
It depends, I think, on the
subsector,
the industry that you're going into within the value chain of tourism. So, for example, if you're investing in a hotel, And that hotel happens to be one that will be branded by a global brand. Almost from the day that the doors open, you'll now start seeing throughput. And again, I think it's always important to recognize that you may invest in local currency to build the building, but much, particularly if it's a hotel that intends to be a 4 or 5 star, much of your income is going to come in as Forex, dollars, euros, pounds. And so the return on that investment may be one, at least you'll be cash flow generating quickly. If it's 3 star, 2 star, or smaller bed and breakfast, it may take a longer bit of time, but you've now got the Airbnbs of the world that even help you with those types of properties and assets. So if you're in the hotelier sector, you still may take 5 years or so to break even, but you will see a return on your investment, unless, again, we're in a pandemic and there's a downturn. But this is a once in a 100-year type of thing that's happening, we hope. If you're in the tourism, a tour guiding company, yes, that can take a longer time for you to break even, because you have to popularize your business and you have to become the go-to participant in your space, which is not easy. And you do have openings and closings. I mean, if you're in the restaurateur part of the tourism sector, you might have a 2 or 3 year run. If no one comes, you close the doors. I mean, there are many different players in the sector. And when you're thinking about investing and you're thinking about the return and you're thinking about the type of investor, whether you're an impact investor, private equity investor, or a trade investor, you have different things that you're looking for out of that investment, and you have different time horizons. And so all of that plays into which pools of funds go where in the sector.
Okay, so it means that obviously, regardless of the value chain, it cannot be a pushback for investors. Now, how do you think, or how do you advise tourism either investors or tourism boards to take advantage of? Because not much has been said about a single African air transport markets, and then the Continental Free Trade Agreement, how tourism players need to take advantage of that.
Well, definitely there's a discussion that's emerging about the importance of domestic tourism. And I expand that a bit to include regional, sub-regional tourism. So intra-region, intra-Africa. So if you're in Kenya, you might promote your tourism offerings to Uganda, Rwanda, Tanzania, South Africa, similarly promoting to Namibia, or Namibians promoting their offerings to South Africans. Mauritius has long promoted its offerings to South Africans, for example. So in that regard, you're looking at cross-border tourism on the continent in a different way. We haven't yet launched the free trade agreement, but once it is launched, this will be trade in services. And I think that we will see a huge benefit. In fact, I think we'll see a benefit because of COVID over the next 5 years, because there will be countries around the world that are still rebuilding, not open, restricting travel. All of that will mean that if you're on the continent, you may be encouraged to look at opportunities for business travel and tourism closer to home, which will be a plus. I think that the key thing will be the tastes of an African tourist to go to another country may be different than a foreign or international tourist to come. And so those providing touristic offerings will need to tailor their offerings to meet the regional and the continental market.
Okay. Now, definitely, the silver lining of this pandemic is about, you know, we've heard about regional tourism, sustainability, responsible tourism, etc. Now, in your latest or your last article that you authored, you said the pandemic affords Africa the time to lead in the tourism sector. Can you throw some more light on that?
The thought that I had and have is that this period gives the continent time to, and again, for some, it will be traumatic, but this too shall pass.
Definitely.
And when we think about continental intra-African tourism, we had kind of, I wouldn't say written it off, but everybody was traveling all around the world looking for tourists, as opposed to putting continental tourists first. And the value of that to me is, one, you talked about the use of the term sustainable. It's a sustainable touristic market. It's not likely to be fickle. It's a market that also drives trade.
Yes.
So if you go someplace on your first trip on holiday, but you enjoy that trip, you're more likely to think about doing business in that market and looking for ways that have a business end to get back there. So it's a great time to align continental intra-African tourism with the continental free trade areas ascension. So that's a plus. The other point that I mentioned was that you have tremendous flows of capital from Africans who are living around the world, the diaspora. And a big chunk of that, it comes as remittances. But people also travel home. So the in the near term, to me, the travelers who will come from across oceans will likely be and eagerly be diasporans. And so there's an opportunity to look at how can we attract more diasporans. And again, you've got, you know, I use the term that Ali Mazrui coined, American Africans, although they are diasporans in many parts of the world, to distinguish them from African Americans. So first generation Africans, they will come. But you'll also have the African Americans who were taken abroad as captives. I use the example of Ghana's
Year
of Return initiative, which was very successful. And now they're positioning a Beyond the Return campaign for people to actually live there or have part-time homes during the year there. Again, that drives economic development. And it goes beyond, because if I come on a trip and then I start thinking about living, I start thinking about business linkages. And so that becomes a plus. The other area that I think is also key is the creation of greater public-private partnerships around the continent and reaching out. I wrote that piece for a session that was put on by the African World Heritage Fund. So we have our heritage, UNESCO identified heritage sites around the continent, and most Africans can't name 10 of them. It's an opportunity for us to raise the profile of our heritage sites and to visit them and create linkages between our schools, our universities, and those sites to promote them, but also to become familiar with them. Because the point that I also mentioned was that in many instances, the communities around these heritage sites and even some of our touristic attractions, unless you work in a business that's in the tourism space, we don't get adequate benefit out of that.
True.
And so this is an opportunity for us to think about how do we better align build back better going forward. So I think it's a time when you do need resilience. But it's a time when, and I'm hopeful that African nations that reach out for IMF and other development partner funds to get through this period, do not neglect the tourism sector.
But
important sector. Go ahead.
Okay. So now, if you look at the, what you've just said, if you also look at the other side, where of course tourism is a transversal sector, and some of the infrastructure that would allow tourism to grow or spread the development is sometimes it has to come from the from high level. And so you can see that tourism people, i.e. if you use colloquially, if you look at, say, tourism as in, the end user and all of that, can be promoting. But if we don't have the feet freedom right, and people don't see giving Kenya Airways a right to, fly from Johannesburg to other countries, or Ethiopia not being allowed to do that, it then will stifle the progress and the point that you quite reached in there.
No, I mean, we have our open skies, African open skies legislation, and we have competition between particularly our state-owned enterprises that are in the aviation space. But at the same time, if you were to look over the last 20 years, there's more intra-African air travel. So we're going in the right trajectory, in the right direction. But there will continually be negotiations, because when you have, Ethiopian Airlines was growing in terms of the routes that it covered. You have younger airlines, but fast growing, like Rwanda Airlines, they're growing. You have, in our instance, a loss-making airline, but that's still connected a lot of countries in South Africa.
No, it is. We can't allow South Africa Airways to go. It's a key player.
So we would like to have it, because it travels to places that international carriers don't. The quality of the service in the airline, in the airplane, was typically good.
It was very good. No, sorry to cut you, but I thought it was far the best.
No, it's
quality, service quality.
Yeah, so we have to get the macro fundamentals for the airline to be sorted out, and but I think that you talked about the Continental Free Trade Area Agreement. I mean, that's a platform through which you would have, and I talked about trade and services, you have the aviation industry call to figure out how to align, because we even need low cost carriers, EasyJet and others, to play a role so that one can travel, because 15, 20 years ago, travel around the continent was really for expats, business people, politicians. Yeah. And most of our travel was off the continent if we could afford to go. With the rise in the middle class on the continent, the GDP growth that was sustained in a number of countries, we started to see much more intra-African business travel. So that was helping the MICE industry. Countries like Rwanda have really, I think, done a yeoman's job to try and get facilities for hosting meetings. But places like Nairobi, where you had a large UN cluster and diplomatic cluster, saw a lot more travel. Ghana benefited in that regard. South Africa, with its multiple cities that had world-class exhibition halls and conference halls, really benefited. And so I think the message about the value of seeing in tourism, the message about having airline access, has been getting through to countries. So, I think that definitely we need more airlines and how to run airlines cost effectively. I mean, when you have, and like Virgin on the, Virgin, I think Australia and Virgin Atlantic, it was, needing a bailout. I mean, these are tough times, but these two, I think, shall pass. And so those who can weather this storm will be in a very good position a year or two from now.
Okay. What would be your advice to for collaboration between the tourism boards with other sectors to ensure that we maximize the full potential of tourism as an economic driver on the continent?
Well, I mean, it goes, I won't say it goes without saying, but do not ignore your local tourist anymore. You could even go as far as to build your tourism strategy around attracting African tourists. Let everybody else come in on top of that, rather than build your tourism strategy around attracting non-African tourists. And then if they don't come, or if they're late, you have a crisis. You know, the income to go on holiday is growing on the continent. Again, hand in hand with this idea of facilitating greater trade around the continent, we have to promote greater leisure travel around the continent so that people get to know the markets and get to know the intra-regional market, so that one is not just familiar with West Africa because you're from West Africa. You become familiar with East Africa. You become familiar with Southern Africa. You become familiar with Central and North Africa. You know, that those are the kinds of, and you don't see, or haven't seen, as many of the tourism boards with their outward facing promotion really focusing on how do I address the continental tourist. And so, you know, I think it would be something that is not a short-term thing to do. Like, okay, I'll just do that now, and as soon as coronavirus is gone, I'll go back to my traditional market. It should be a pivot. And it should be a pivot because the international traveler is still going to come to the continent for flora, you know, the big five. You can't find those anywhere else in the world.
Yes.
So they will come. So you want to keep improving, but your throughput, your volume goes up immensely if you're now attracting African tourists. Some of the tourists who leave the continent, and the thing, and I think that's a misperception or a misconception as well, that we don't have enough African tourists. African tourists go all over Europe, all over Asia, all over the United States, proud say I went to this place or that place. We should also encourage the pride in saying, I've been to Egypt, I've been to Morocco,
Mozambique.
Have you seen this
Africa,
Mauritia,
yes.
And this in Mozambique?
In Accra.
You haven't gone anywhere until you get to Accra and you go to, have you been to the castles? You haven't been anywhere yet. You know, we don't rave about those, you know, Timbuktu. Have you been there? You should go. The pyramids in Sudan, you've seen those, have you? There's more pyramids in Sudan than in all of Egypt. And those are the kind of things that, as Africans do that, you'll find that we'll be attracting more people to the continent. You know, I think about tourism in Europe. The French go, and again, when it's high season, they can't go to places because there's so many tourists, but they, and I'll just say broadly, European touristic attractions do well because Europeans themselves go and they write about it and they put it in movies and they make it glamorous to have visited those places. We need more of that on the continent. And this, I think this time, the other thing that I'll say that as an investment opportunity, and I think I've, you know, in the conversations I've had, people are thinking about it, is how do we digitize our offerings better, package them so that people can do virtual tours, so that we make sure that our media strategy is aligned with our tourism strategy, so that when we are making movies, we're making TV shows, we really promote Africa, as many other countries in the world do. I mean, I China was able to open up as fast as it did because people going to see the Great Wall were from China. They weren't waiting for tourists from other parts of the world who were grappling with coronavirus. They were going to see their sites. You know, we need to have that as our build back better strategy.
No, I think that's good, because a friend of mine was also using the Film Summit in South Africa, and what he wanted to do was to use our attractions to tell the story, and that's, you know, that's what it is. Thank you so much, Michael. But before you go, I want you to walk us through your journey. Who is Michael Sudhakasa, and what you've been doing, you know, as a legal aspect, as a business. Business, you know, man, if I want to put it, and tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, thank you very much for that. I you know, and you were starting to give a bit about my professional background. I'm a commercial attorney by training, and okay. I've worked as an economic development practitioner most of my career, focusing on trade and investment facilitation between initially the U.S. and Africa. An African-American mother, my father's Nigerian, but I was born in New York and grew up in the U.S. predominantly. But my mother was an anthropologist, so she gave us the opportunity when she would take sabbatical and she studied market women in West Africa to travel to and to live in Ghana, Nigeria. In law school, I traveled for the first time to Cote d'Ivoire and learned French. But I became very interested in economic development on the continent and became interested in tourism as a driver of economic development, because I realized that it's really a sector built around trade and services. And although the product was typically developed in a local currency, sales were made into dollars, euros, rand. So I thought, here is an export product that has a basis in a local currency and your sale nationally. It has huge potential to help the continent grow. It's an inclusive sector. Young people can get involved. The barriers to entry, skill standpoint, are not too huge. And we have the natural beauty that most countries on the continent have. The first time we really, I think I really focused on the sector was around 2008, 2009, in the run-up to the World Cup that was held in South Africa. I worked with the city of Johannesburg to develop their first Joburg Shopping Festival, and was able, in doing research, to plan that, to travel to Dubai and look at the Dubai Shopping Festival and some of the Asian shopping festivals. And we were trying to promote cross-border trade in Southern Africa, recognizing that literally something like $2 billion is spent at the time, 2008, 2009, by the neighboring countries to South Africa, people coming over and buying from South Africa and going back. And the idea was, if they stayed one more night for anything touristic, that could be hundreds of millions of additional dollars in South Africa. And that was just Gauteng province and Southern Africa. What I realized, though, as an economic development practitioner, was that we weren't investing adequately, I don't think, to develop enough hotels. We do a lot of travel as a company, Africa Business Group, around the continent. There'd be one 5-star hotel, one 4-star hotel in a country. So those prices were exorbitant and the service would slip. Why not have more? And so I participated in the tourism hotel conference, hotel investment conference that Binch does as a speaker, and got to see more about that particular part of the value chain that they actually were. The hoteliers were starting to look up and say, hey, there's an opportunity. But the rest of the value chain was lagging. And so that's when the conversation with Reed emerged and was recruited to help develop last year's inaugural. Right. They had a short program before, and we expanded it last year, and we are looking to expand it further. And drive investment to SMEs in the value chain, structure in the value chain, help benchmark other countries around the world, their industries, from how government plays a role in investment, how private equity and private sector financiers play a role, and see how to bring that learning to the continent. For us as a firm, agriculture is an important sector for us, renewable energy is an important sector for us, and tourism is an important sector because all of them impact the inclusion, the economic inclusion that one finds on the continent. And so we've determined to focus on, again, trade in those sectors and investment promotion in those sectors.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Michael. And what will be your last words, if you have any last words to share?
This is a time for resilience. It's a time for governments, to the degree that they can, to support the tourism sector, to help to preserve the investments that have been made. And for investors, it's a time to really judiciously at the continent, because the continent is growing. The continent has opportunities, the continent has an untapped opportunity. So time, if you're sitting on capital, to try and start doing due diligence, even if it's virtual, remote due diligence about opportunities. And in the coming 18 months to 36 months, it's a great time to invest, because when we do come back better, I think that the continent will offer tremendous opportunities and returns for those who invest.
It's been a great pleasure having you on the VO Tourism Podcast. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Gojo.